Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. I've got some top news stories for you today from Israel, and guess what? You're listening, so you're already on top of your game. Survive and thrive, people. Knowledge is the best weapon. Today is Thursday, June 11th, 2026. In the Gregorian calendar, and the 26th of Sivan, 5786 in the Hebrew calendar. We have some top stories for you today, and then we have more detail about the U.S. attacks on Iran and Iran's retaliations with our political analyst, Binyamin Moalem. We'll finish today's end-of-week report with a Torah thought by Rabbi Yossi Madvig of Oswego, New York. Now, let's get to the news. The United States carried out a second consecutive night of strikes on Iran, targeting military surveillance systems, communication infrastructure, and air defense sites. U.S. Central Command warned that further action could follow if a peace agreement is not reached. Iran responded by launching attacks on U.S. military targets in Jordan, Kuwait, and Bahrain, while also threatening to fire on vessels transiting the Strait of Hormuz. Iranian media reported explosions near the waterway and claimed two ships came under fire. Despite the threats, U.S. officials say commercial traffic continues to move through the Strait of Hormuz. Iran warned Gulf nations on Wednesday that they face a legal and moral responsibility to stop the U.S. and Israel from using their territory or facilities to launch strikes against Tehran, against Iran, that's Iran's capital, a direct warning aimed at countries like Bahrain, Jordan, and Qatar that host American military bases. The statement came in as Iran and the U.S. traded fresh strikes following the downing of a U.S. Army Apache helicopter over the Strait of Hormuz, the most significant instance of fighting between Washington and Tehran since the April 8th ceasefire. Iran struck the Muwafaq Salti Air Base in Jordan, which has hosted American F-35 fighters, prompting Jordan to shoot down five incoming Iranian missiles. Now, that's pretty incredible. I mean, Jordan and Israel have had relations for a long time, but we are seeing Jordan step up to the plate in instances like this and in instances in the previous fighting between Iran and Israel in which Jordan did shoot down missiles. Now, of course, this is to Jordan's benefit. They don't want these missiles to land in their territory, but Jordan and Israel penned a normalization and peace deal in 1994, and it's still holding up, and we see the benefits of having neighbors who have peace deals with Israel. 5 days after Israeli and Lebanese delegations met at the State Department for the first direct military talk between the two countries in decades, Hezbollah broke the newly renewed truce with Israel when missiles came crashing down on the northern Israeli border communities of Iftah and Ramot Naftali. Israel responded by striking Hezbollah command infrastructure in Beirut's Dahya suburb, a strike that Lebanese media claimed took the lives of two and wounded at least 11. The IDF also issued mass evacuation orders to residents of Tyre, an ancient city in Lebanon. Turkish President Recep Erdogan issued a direct threat against Israel on Wednesday. He warns that Israeli military operations in Syria and Lebanon are now reaching a point where they threaten Turkey. Erdogan declared that, quote, "We see comprehensive initiatives led by Israel in the Mediterranean, and no one should pursue adventures there," end quote. And he also said that, quote, "Israel's aggression threatens the entire world." He warns that if the rights of Turks or Turkish Cypriots in Cyprus are harmed in the Middle East, our response will be unequivocal and strong. Netanyahu fired back quickly, calling Erdogan an anti-Semitic dictator who commits genocide against the Kurds and supports Hamas and is the last person who can lecture the State of Israel on morality. Turkey's interior minister also claimed that Turkey would one day take control of Jerusalem. With us here to discuss the events of Iran, Israel, U.S. dynamics following the big flare-up in Israel earlier in the week, overnight from Sunday into Monday, is our political analyst Binyamin Moalem. Let's get to his part where he's going to do a deep dive on all of these topics. And trust me, you're not going to want to miss this because Binyamin Moalem is deeply engaged in Israeli current events and policy discussions. Having worked as a foreign law clerk at the Supreme Court of Israel, he has a unique vantage point on Israeli jurisprudence. Binyamin devotes much of his time to curating and explaining current events and politics in Israel on his popular Instagram page, By Moalem, where he provides balanced news coverage from an Israeli perspective. Let's have him join us. Binyamin Moalem, thanks for coming on to the show today. We really have a lot to unpack, but we're going to keep it tight so that our listeners can get caught up quickly today. Thank you for joining us.
Good to be with you.
So we had quite a week on Monday early morning here in Israel. Well, starting on Sunday evening, but I personally was not here in Israel on Sunday evening. I was on a plane. As soon as I landed, everybody on the plane was getting caught up on the news that there was incoming attacks from Iran. There were sirens. People had to run to the shelters Sunday evening. And by Monday morning, I got just to my apartment building. I made it up to the first or second floor. I had to actually drop my luggage because the sirens were ringing out here in Tel Aviv. And we were in and out of the shelter a few times. We had several alerts, two of them we actually had to get into the bomb shelter. One of them, the missile didn't end up coming over here in this direction, so everyone was being Israeli as we are and waiting outside of the bomb shelter to get the further siren to let us know whether we actually had to enter the protected space or just be near the protected space. So that was Monday morning, and I think that a lot of Israelis here were expecting a big flare-up again with Iran, just like what we had in late March and April, or, you know, throughout March and April, I should say. So tell us what happened Sunday evening that caused Iran to fire at Israel after what was supposed to be a ceasefire that started on April 8th.
All right, so we have a lot to unpack here. This has been quite a week between Iran, Israel, the United States. So we back up, if we go back to last week, we had President Trump had brokered a ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon. Now, this was between the Lebanese government and the Israeli government, basically saying that Israeli troops could remain in South Lebanon and there would be a ceasefire. Of course, that was predicated on Hezbollah accepting it, which they did not. Hezbollah continued attacking Israeli troops in South Lebanon and communities in northern Israel. Now, this ceasefire was brokered after President Trump leaned on Israel not to attack Hezbollah targets in Beirut. This was very important to the president because Iran said that they would walk away from the talks with the United States if Israel would attack in Beirut. Prime Minister Netanyahu finally realized that he can no longer hold back after Hezbollah fired missiles at northern Israel on Sunday, and Israel attacked one Hezbollah target in Beirut. Now, Iran decided that it was going to retaliate for this, and it fired, I think it was five missiles at Israel in its first wave of attacks on Sunday. And these missiles were all intercepted and shot down. Now, what Iran has done here is they're trying to change the political dynamic and the political balance, geopolitical balance in the Middle East. Until now, they have had Hezbollah, essentially its own insurance policy on Israel's border. They're doing the dirty work for Iran. They would attack Israel. They were essentially Iran's largest terror proxy in the world, sitting on the border with Israel, threatening Israel at all times. Now, Hezbollah has been significantly weakened in its war with Israel, both in 2024 and over the past few months. And Hezbollah no longer has the same stature that it had, whether it's the deterrence that it instilled in Israelis, or the popularity in Lebanon, for that matter. For the first time, we see a Lebanese government that is calling for Hezbollah to be dismantled. They want Hezbollah out. They don't want the headache that Hezbollah brings upon them, the attack, the destruction. They blame Hezbollah for this. especially the Christian and the Sunni communities in Lebanon. Lebanon's a mix of Christians, Sunni Muslims, and Shiite Muslims. Hezbollah is Shiite. And for the first time, and Iran sees this, and Iran is getting nervous because now their main proxy, which at one point was more powerful than many European militaries, is now being challenged by the relatively weak Lebanese government, Lebanese military. They're still not strong enough probably to throw them out, but Israel has done quite a number on Hezbollah over the past few years. And what Hezbollah is now doing is trying to send a message to Lebanon, because for many, many years, Hezbollah justified its presence in South Lebanon as, we're the protectors of Lebanon. Lebanon needs us to protect Lebanon from Israel. And now Lebanese people are no longer buying that, and they're saying, no, we need Hezbollah out so that we'll be protected from Israeli attacks on Hezbollah, which is
destroying our country. Benjamin, do you believe or understand that is the general consensus in Lebanon? Because I'm watching the news and I'm watching all of these media outlets, and a lot of the individuals in South Lebanon near the border, you know, that are Shiite, a lot of them say they still say on television that they're with Hezbollah, or that they're tired of Israel, seen nothing good from Israel in the last decades.
Most Shiites are still on the side of Hezbollah. I'm referring mainly to the Christian and Sunni communities, who until now, even if they harbored anti-Hezbollah sentiment, were not nearly as vocal as they are now. The government itself is calling for Hezbollah to be thrown out, and that has not happened before, ever. By law in Lebanon, the president is Christian, the prime minister is Sunni, the speaker of parliament is Shiite. The Shiite speaker of parliament, he really is the closest ally that Hezbollah has in the Lebanese government. He has not been emphatic in calling on Hezbollah to leave. He has not come out against Hezbollah very publicly. So he's really their main. He has not been a proponent of Lebanese talks with Israel in Washington, whereas the other parts of the government have been. So yes, you're correct from the perspective of the vast majority of Shiite Muslims in Lebanon. But the other communities in Lebanon are turning against Hezbollah, which is new for Lebanon. And the message that Iran is trying to send them now is like, hey, remember how we all those years that Hezbollah said that we're protecting you from Israel, and now you're no longer buying it? No, we really are. We're going to protect you now from Israel, us, Iran, directly, by attacking Israel in response to the Israeli attacks on Beirut. And Israel absolutely cannot accept this equivalence anymore, this dynamic that Iran is trying to impose on the Middle East. And Iran then conducted, I believe it was something like four waves of missile attacks. Thankfully, nobody was hurt. There was one home, I believe, in the Samaria region of the West Bank that was damaged by falling shrapnel from one of the missile attacks. But Israel then conducted a reprisal attack in Iran Sunday night. They destroyed, or it was maybe even early Monday morning by the time it happened. I'm in the U.S., so it's time difference. Israel attacked air defense systems and a petrochemical plant where Iran was manufacturing parts for being able to produce ballistic missiles. Israel had a much larger attack planned. President Trump then called Netanyahu and said, listen, you did what you needed to do. That's enough. President Trump's still trying to salvage the talks. However, shortly thereafter, I believe it was on Monday in the U.S., Iran shot down a U.S. Apache helicopter over the Strait of Hormuz. Thankfully, the two pilots were rescued. They were able to bail out over the Persian Gulf or the Gulf of Oman near the Strait of Hormuz, and they were rescued in a first-of-its-kind rescue mission by an unmanned drone ship, that U.S. naval vessel that is basically unmanned. It rescued the two men. President Trump had said that if any U.S. soldiers were killed, he would end the ceasefire and resume attacks on Iran. Thankfully, no.
Benjamin, do you know any more about that unmanned vessel that came? That's pretty incredible to me. I'm thinking about two people, individuals, being in the water and being rescued by
an unmanned. Yeah, I believe they were in the water for about 2 hours, and this boat with nobody on the boat came by. They managed to climb into the boat, and the boat took them back to U.S. Safety.
Unbelievable. Okay, thanks for taking us through that. Very, very cool visual.
Yeah. I mean, there was a video of not the rescue mission, but how these boats work, like, I think, which is very cool. And so then the U.S. launched a retaliatory attack on Iran for downing that helicopter in the Strait of Hormuz, bombing Iranian air defense systems and radar systems. Iran then retaliated and attacked. This was Tuesday night. Iran now retaliated on U.S. targets in the Gulf. They attacked a U.S. bases in Bahrain, Kuwait, and Jordan. The U.S. is not going to let that go unanswered. So then last night, the U.S. attacked more targets. This time, I think they launched something like 50 missiles at various targets around Iran, some near Tehran, some in the Strait of Hormuz. Then Iran said, we're not going to let this go unanswered. And they attacked U.S. Bases in Jordan, Bahrain, and Kuwait. Now, until now, every time there's been a flare-up, and there have been a few of these since the ceasefire began 2 months ago, whenever Iran decided to retaliate, it would have retaliated in these Gulf states. The only time they ever retaliated against Israel directly was after Israel attacked Beirut earlier this week. And possibly because Israel, they know that Israel's going to retaliate also, and they wanted to prevent that. However, they had gotten to the point where I guess they felt confident enough that President Trump is so determined not to return to war and to get a deal somehow, that they could attack Israel and any Israeli reprisal would be limited, which is what happened. However, now we're at a situation where the U.S. can't allow this tit for tat to keep going on. President Trump won't allow it. Just this morning, President Trump posted on his Truth Social that he is going to strike Iran in capital letters very hard tonight. And he also said that the U.S. will take Karg Island. Now, if the U.S. takes Karg Island, that is the end of the ceasefire. Karg Island, of course, is Iran's main export terminal for its oil. Some 90% of Iran's oil exports go through this island. It's an island in the Persian Gulf. It's kind of deep in the Persian Gulf, and U.S. ground troops would be needed to take it. And this would be a significant escalation and almost more than certainly a resumption of the war if President Trump does do that. I took maybe a half a step back from that in an interview with Fox News slightly after, just after posting that Truth Social post, and said that he doesn't think the American people want an escalation. They want the war to end. They want the troops to come home. But he didn't walk back what he said he was going to do completely, and he said that he is going to launch airstrikes. So I would say with 99.9% certainty, we will see airstrikes tonight. The main question is, to what extent do these airstrikes go? Is it limited to the point where President Trump could stop and say, we're still in a ceasefire? Or does he say, no, that we're going to go all out? Meanwhile, the IDF has said earlier this week that it is ready to conduct what it called a quote-unquote complicated mission to conduct airstrikes on various targets around Iran, which they had planned to do earlier this week. It was canceled after President Trump asked the prime minister not to carry them out. So the IDF were pretty much standing by waiting for the green light from the president. We'll have to see how that plays out later tonight.
Thank you. So I have a couple of questions. One is, how does this affect Israel? How is this going to affect Israel? Should people like myself here in Israel be concerned about American strikes on Iran? Is Israel the punching bag for Iran? And my other question is, can you take us through some of the attacks that Iran made on American bases throughout the region? How bad are they? What's happening on these bases? Is it significant when Iran hits the American bases? Is it the same as when Iran attacks Israel or attacks the UAE? And by the way, how significant have these attacks been on Israel's neighbors in the Gulf? Have they been serious? Because from what I understand, the Gulf countries don't really want the world to know how significant or not significant these attacks are, because they're sort of trying to conceal the news. So how significant are all of these players?
So first, going to your question about, is Israel Iran's punching bag? The answer is no. Israel will respond and is very capable of responding. Israel has complete air superiority over the skies of Iran. They proved that during the war when Israel struck something like 50,000 targets in Iran throughout the past war. So, I mean, Israel isn't concerned about being Iran's punching bag. The question is, to what extent will the United States rein in any Israeli participation in a reprisal attack? Now, if President Trump decides tonight we're going all back in, we're going back to war, Israel will be involved, and we could see significant airstrikes from Israel on Iranian targets. If President Trump decides, you know what, I'm going to escalate it from, you know, last night was more of an escalation from what was the night before. If he decides, okay, I'm going to escalate it a little bit more, but I'm not going to go all out, we'll probably see him asking Israel to sit in the sidelines for this one. But it really depends on what he decides to do this evening. In terms of the damage done, so earlier this week, the one thing that I forgot to say in the beginning was that there was a hangar at Israel's Air Force Base in northern Israel that was damaged from what Dadiev says was falling shrapnel from an intercepted Iranian missile. They said no equipment was damaged, nobody was hurt, but a hangar where planes park was damaged by an Iranian missile attack. And you're right, nobody wants anybody to know the extent of the damage that they sustained in any attack. That goes for Iran, that goes for any Gulf state, it goes for Israel, the United States. So it's really hard to know what exactly happened. There are reports saying that, you know, this was damaged, that was damaged, but it's very hard to know exactly to what extent some of this damage was. We do know that last week in one of the Iranian attacks on Kuwait, their civilian airport was damaged. It just reopened today completely for business, but the main terminal at that airport was sustained some significant damage. Today, it's unclear if this was a direct hit from a missile or if it was a shrapnel from a intercepted missile, but what appears to be an apartment building in Bahrain was damaged. An 11-year-old girl was injured in that attack. So, yeah, there is damage. It's just very hard to know to what extent, especially in countries that do not have freedom of speech as we know it. The UAE in the beginning of the war was ordering, you know, influencers who happen to be in Bahrain, in the United Arab Emirates, to delete posts about damage that happened to hotels, to buildings, because they did not want the world knowing what was happening, because they wanted to portray themselves as being a safe country that is open for tourism.
Absolutely. Are there nuclear fears that are rising to the surface at this time? I understood yesterday that the U.S. State Department was calling on Americans to actually leave Iraq, which created a question for me in my mind. And some of the
nuclear fears.
Are there fears that we are preparing for nuclear war from either the American side, from the Iranian side? Is this something that is going to be an escalation from the missiles that Israel has seen and that Iran has seen?
No, I mean, nuclear war would not be on the table right now. Iran does not have the capabilities to conduct a nuclear warfare. They don't have a nuclear weapon. And the U.S. isn't going to use one. Israel's certainly not going to use one. Anybody who is suggesting that a nuclear war is on the horizon next week, that would be a complete shock, I think, to anybody, to everybody. Again, an escalation, certainly, but it would be a conventional escalation, not a nuclear one.
And what kind of conventional escalation? More missiles, more repeated attacks, more missile attacks?
Yeah, I mean, if this does escalate to, you know, it'll likely be what we saw during the March war, and it would be just a repeat of what we had in March. If it escalates to the maximum, we would probably see what we experienced in Israel during March. Iran tries to fire missiles. The U.S. and Israel conduct repeated airstrikes on various targets throughout Iran in hopes of forcing them to agree to a deal, or in, you know, really hoping that it topples the regime somehow.
Do you see an exit plan here at all? Is there anything that you
question.
Believe?
I think the that President Trump is really hoping for. I think he was really hoping that this deal would happen. He's been very frustrated. He put a proposal on the table 2 weeks ago. You remember he was saying a deal is days away. A deal could happen as soon as tonight. A deal could happen. You know, we heard this time and time again from the president, and that never happened. And it appears that Iran has really just been ignoring him. And for 2 weeks, the Iranian leadership has pretty much been sitting on this proposal and not getting back to the president. And Trump is very frustrated and losing his patience, not just because Iran has been attacking U.S. interests in the region, but Iran has essentially been ignoring his proposal and his overtures to make a deal. And that is also annoying him and could be what leads us back to war, because Iran has pretty much reached the conclusion, at least they had as of earlier this week, that the U.S. is done with the war. The U.S. is not interested in fighting again. We could hold out. We could hope for, we can try to get the best deal we can possibly get. If we even agree to a deal, you know, we could even attack Israel and we won't have to pay that big of a price because President Trump does not want to go back to war. And we could be at the point where Iran may have overplayed its hand and President Trump may decide that he wants to go back to war because he is just sick and tired of Iran dragging its feet. Now, another option the president could take is, you know what? We're not going to go to war. The blockade and the Strait of Hormuz is working. Iran is suffering economically. And the longer this blockade lasts, the worse it's going to be for the regime. It'll take time. It's not going to be like a war where you get, I don't call it instant gratification in the sense where you get to destroy the targets. And again, we saw during the war, the 40-day war did not topple the regime, and it did not make Iran any more willing to make concessions. So President Trump might say, like, you know what, fine. I don't want to go back to war, but we're just going to sit here and keep this blockade in place. Apparently, the president said that there was some secret mission. He managed to get 100 million barrels of oil out of the Strait of Hormuz, and he said that's the reason why oil now is only at $85 a barrel, which is far less than many analysts suspected. You know, during the war started, some thought it would hit $200 or even $300 a barrel. So there is an inflation issue in the United States, partially because of the war, and the president has midterm elections coming up. So a lot of things that he needs to take into account. And Iran knows all this. Iran knows that the World Cup is starting today. Iran knows that the president's midterm is coming up. Iran knows that there's big celebrations for U.S. 250th birthday in July. And they want to take advantage of that by dragging their feet as long as possible. The question is, will President Trump just stand pat? Will he make concessions that Iran wants? Or will he escalate military action? And we'll see the first step of that at least tonight.
Thank you so much, Binyamin. Thanks for joining us today and taking us through all of that. And we'll have to see what goes on over the weekend.
Good to be with you again, Shannon.
The Israel Daily News now has its own direct donation platform after losing dozens of supporters last year during Spotify's takeover of our distribution site. Listeners can now contribute monthly or make one-time donations directly through the website. Support helps keep our independent journalism alive and growing. You can also follow Israel Daily News across our social media platforms on Instagram, TikTok, X, and LinkedIn at IsraelDaily.news or Israel Podcast if you're on X. And now for a Torah thought by Rabbi Yossi Madvig of Oswego, New York.
This week's Torah portion, Shalach, discusses mainly the spies that Moses sends into the land of Israel to spy out the land and determine how to conquer the land of Israel. Therefore, the Haftorah discusses a similar scenario where Joshua, Moses' successor, also sends spies into the land of Israel in order to spy out the land and determine how they're going to conquer it. But there's a major difference between these two stories. The most striking difference is that when Moses sends the spies, he sends 12 spies, a leader from each tribe, whereas Joshua sends only 2 spies. And who were those spies? It was Caleb, and also Pinchas, who was a Kohen, he was a priest. And these 2 spies that he chooses link the past and the future. Caleb was actually one of the original spies that was sent by Moses 38 years earlier. And Pinchas, who is a Kohen, a priest, usually you wouldn't send a priest, wouldn't go to do these kinds of things. But in the messianic times, when Mashiach comes, and the whole land is turned over for complete holiness, so then the priests will have this special connection to the land. And so therefore, he's already thinking into the future when Mashiach comes. Regarding that difference of the 12 spies versus the 2, on a deeper level, what does that represent? There are two types of service of God, and spying out the land represents this idea of spying out, you know, looking within ourselves and finding the faults within ourselves and how to conquer our own animal selves, our own human selves, in order to be more in tune with the divine. And when Moses sends the 12 spies, that is representative of a more individualistic aspect of divine service, right? There's 12 spies, one for each of the 12 tribes. And so it's really dependent on each individual type of person. Joshua, on the other hand, only sends the 2 spies, which is representative of just the overall communal aspect of serving God, particularly in the 2 ways of serving God, both in the positive and the negative. The positive commandments, the do's, and the negative commandments, the do nots. And so too, we have to incorporate both of these aspects, right? While we each have our own individual way of serving God and our own divine expression, we also have to remember the main overarching goal of the totality of serving God, of what the main goal is, the main purpose of elevating and rectifying the world. And likewise, we shouldn't get lost in the general principles, and we also have to remember that we have our own particular mission to fulfill in this world. And finally, I'd like to give a shout out to a very special woman in this week's Haftorah, and that is Rahab, who was perhaps not the most, the person that you would look to, perhaps as an ideal example. Actually, the Midrash tells us she was very, very beautiful. And unfortunately, she became a prostitute at a very young age, at the age of 10 years old, when the Jews had just left Egypt. And now, as they're spying out Egypt, she's now 50. And she is still in this business, unfortunately. But she does a very special thing. She recognizes the holiness and the specialness of the Jewish people and of the spies in particular. She realizes that they are doing something good and holy. They had heard about what happened, about the spilling of the sea and the escape from Egypt. And the people were very afraid of the Jewish people coming because they realized they have this supernatural assistance. And she helps the spies accomplish their mission and also converts to Judaism, recognizing the special holiness that exists with the Jewish people and their divine assistance. And the Midrash tells us she actually marries Joshua himself. And from that union comes out many prophets like Jeremiah and Ezekiel. So it's always, it's never too late. And just like we had in last week's Torah portion, we had the second Passover offering telling us it's never too late. Even someone like this who was doing something that was really inappropriate for so long can turn their lives over and come into the holy people of God. And so we should always remember also for us, it's never too late to always start doing the right thing. Shabbat Shalom.
All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Today is Thursday, June 11th, 2026. Tel Aviv has a low of 24 degrees Celsius and a high of 26 degrees. That's 76 degrees Fahrenheit for the low, going up to 79 degrees for the high. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. The Israel Weekly News Wrap is a newsletter with the top 5 stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week. And of course, with a personal note from me at the top. You can sign up for that at israeldailynews.org. Scroll down to the bottom and drop your email address in so that you can get on our mailing. A big thank you goes out to our incredible sponsor, Marianne Vollinger, our writer, Perry Schwartz, and our associate producer, Lori May, and our new interns. Shout out to Alex for his news updates today. Have a great and productive day and an excellent weekend. Shabbat Shalom, everyone.